Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
You can go ahead and call him.
Oh, gosh, what was the call?
Hi everyone, Shizue Rotodachi here, and this is Chasing Cows and Sustainability, the radio journal following my summer of food on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm currently an intern with the James Ranch in Durango, Colorado, working in the grass-finished beef operation as well as on the 5-acre organic farm. I'm also here on a fellowship from my university studying holistic management. Every other week, I let you eavesdrop in on my life here, bringing you the sounds and stories of the ranch as I hear them. This week, moments of crises, in which I confront crises both personal and climatic. Thanks for tuning in.
Here, the biggest obstacle is water, which is related to climate. We didn't get a very good snowpack this year, so our water will go off really early. And I've got quite a few friends that farm for a living that may not even farm this year because their water is going to go off too early. I know a lot of people have sold their cows already because they know they're not going to get enough hay, and people are always forecasting when they think their water is going to go off or how much they're going to get and that kind of stuff. And that's kind of like talking about the weather in other places, you know. Which is just small talk, but here it's the water.
On Saturday morning, I met up with Dustin Stein, a 29-year-old farmer and rancher based in Mancos, Colorado, the next town over from the James Ranch. He, like every other agrarian in these parts, was worried about the drought. He wasn't going to give up the season, but he knew it wouldn't be easy to make it through the summer.
I named my business Stubborn Farm because there is numerous times where I probably should have given up. Things just weren't going well, I was losing money, whatever. I was just too stubborn to quit. There was moments where I wondered if I was doing the right thing or would be happy doing this forever. And most of that is related to finances, really. You know, just questioning whether or not I could make a living out of this and be financially stable. And that's kind of always in question in farming. You know, when you rely on the natural world for your income, it's kind of out of your hands. You can only do so much. And you can be smart about it and structure your business to be flexible and that sort of thing, but it's all dependent on the weather. So I think I should be able to make a profitable business if the weather stays like it is, but with climate change, I don't know. It'll probably change enough over my lifetime that I'll have to change my business and what I do. You know, at some point, cattle and hay might not be profitable, or produce might not be profitable. You know, you never know. And here, that's totally reliant on the water. At some point, there just won't be enough to go around. I mean, cattle and hay are probably the biggest industry here in this valley, and things are changing pretty rapidly. And, you know, even the conservative people that used to argue that climate change wasn't real, I think they're kind of recognizing that the weather patterns are changing, and we're having to change our operations to reflect that. And you know, we have a lot of public land around here, and so a lot of people put their cows up in the mountains for the summer, and that can be pretty hard on the public land, and it can also be hard to get one of those leases. And so for me, being younger and having a smaller, newer operation, it can be harder to have those sort of leases that give you a little bit of security with the changing weather. But this year I was able to come up with enough leases to get the hay that we need and get enough grass for our cows for the summer, that I shouldn't have to sell any cows. This year, I feel like I have and hope I have enough land to not have to worry about overgrazing anything and have enough places to move our cows around often enough to keep the grass in good shape and the pasture in good shape. But sometimes you have more cows than you do grass, and you either have to overgraze something or sell some cows or something. So I don't know. I don't know what'll happen long term.
So I'm sitting on the couch, Googling Colorado fires. I'm looking at news stories. I'll read you some of the headlines. Raging Colorado, Arizona wildfires prompt heavy rain or other weather Black needed at Colorado. Change in weather needed at Colorado fire. Colorado wildfire grows as blazes continue to threaten Colorado west. Fire now most destructive in state history. To say that it is dry here is quite an understatement. This year, for the whole state, it's an incredible drought year. And so that drought, coupled with strong winds and forests that are littered with trees killed by beetles, which means normally trees that could resist going up in flames are standing snags, dried out and just like kindling. These three points of vulnerability are resulting in the worst fires Colorado has ever seen. Most of the fires, authorities have said, have been sparked by lightning strikes. And so you kind of hope for a rainstorm, but minus the lightning. There's a couple fires that are seriously concentrated in the southern and southwest part of the state, a couple hours from Durango. Every day when we're out in the field weeding, you hear helicopters flying over, several of them throughout the day, checking for fires. It's crazy. You can tell that the whole state's on high alert. I'm surrounded here by lush irrigated pastures, so I'm not worried about going up in flames. But we're pumping so much water to keep our soils irrigated here, and in cowboy country, we're just really hurting. We're really hurting for water. Everyone's just holding their breaths until we get to July, when the monsoon season is supposed to start. But, you know, betting on rain is never a safe bet. It's scary, though, you know. It's scary how we can just, whole state can go up in flames. There's lightning. I wonder if it's gonna spark a fire. Do you hear that? It's raining. It's actually raining. Hard. It's pitch black and it's a Thursday night and this is the first rain that I've seen really in weeks. It's wonderful. And then it's gone. As quickly as it came.
I don't have enough water over here to run that whole herd either. Time we get there, we're going to be out of water there too. Or not out, but it's going to be...
That's Gene speaking, the full-time cowboy who works the cattle on the 90,000 acres of public lands the James Ranch leases, located just outside of Dove Creek in Colorado. On Wednesday morning, Joe and I drove out to meet Gene and his wife, cowgirl Lou Jean, to discuss, well, water, or rather the lack thereof. The cattle are currently grazing on about 45,000 acres of land held by the Forest Service. They'll stay here, rotating among the fenced pasture areas all summer long, before being led back down the mountain to the public lands held by the Bureau of Land Management for the winter. Forest lands are used in the summer because their higher elevation means cooler temperatures and a greater chance of rain. Rain which fills ponds needed to water the cattle and supports a healthy stand of grasses and shrubs. However, this year is different. The drought has left ponds dry, and in some areas, hauling water in a big water truck is just out of the question. The lack of water also means there may not be enough feed. Every year, the James Ranch has to submit a proposal to the Forest Service outlining their plans for grazing. In order for the proposal to be approved by the Forest Service, the plan must demonstrate that the lands will not be overgrazed, left degraded, and seriously devastated. See, livestock grazing on public lands is considered a privilege, not a right, and so the health of the ecosystem and the natural wildlife populations are prioritized. The James Ranch has a good reputation when it comes to the treatment of these lands. Practicing holistic management, the James Ranch makes sure the livestock never linger too long in any one area, ensuring plant life regrowth and recovery. They are also careful to move the cattle in such a way that they never come into a pasture that can't provide enough feed, which would lead to overgrazing by the herd. Dave and Joe's plan is particularly unique because every year they leave 2 to 3 pasture areas undisturbed. This is a practice very much appreciated by the Forest Service. This has led to a better relationship between Dave and Joe and the Forest Service representative, Heather. So every year when Dave and Joe craft a careful plan and present it to Heather, they usually have little problem getting it approved. But plans can't take into account everything, especially emergencies like this drought. It's just really, 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 really dry. And given the state of the land, it had become pretty clear that the original plan just wouldn't work. The pasture the cattle were supposed to stay in for another couple of weeks would barely make the cows through another 10 days.
I think we got two options here. We could speed up moving out of this appointment and just move, push everything forward a couple weeks and gain it here.
Yeah.
Or the other option is we just leave it. We try to stay the course, and then we're just blowing through here. And I'm sure we'll have enough water between these two pastures for 30 days.
Yeah.
This is a bet.
Yeah.
This is a bet here, Gene.
Yeah, I know your cattle on it raining.
Well,
where is the cattle's water? Is there enough feed? Should we break up the herds so that they can have less impact across a greater area? Is it even possible for us to drive them up along the new course on horseback?
So I guess what I'm saying is if we move half of the herd into here, then we could get our 40 days and make up a little bit of time and go over here in the near draw and stay with everything and then come back.
It's going to be a pain though, and I have to go this way.
But we'll do it.
An hour and several scrapped ideas later, a new plan is agreed upon. The map is rolled up, notes scrawled on scrap paper shoved into pockets, and Joe and I jump back into the pickup, Joe eager to call Heather to set up a meeting. Time is of the essence. The cattle are thirsty. So I'm sitting outside my cabin waiting for Dave. It's about 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning, and today is the first day I'm going to get on a saddle. Yesterday, when we had to change the management plan, part of us shifting it around meant that the big drive that I was supposed to be participating in the last week of July is now being moved up to the first week of July, which means I have 2 weeks to learn how to ride a horse and ride like a cowgirl instead of something closer to 5 weeks. So it's going to be interesting, to say the least.
Okay, the first thing we do is brush it.
Dave shows me how to saddle Billy, an 11-year-old horse with an auburn coat and a strong frame. We brush down his sides, removing any dirt or other sources of irritation, and then spread the blanket and pad across his back, the pad's edge lining up with Billy's front legs. I wrap my arms around the bulky saddle and attempt to fling it gracefully across his body, but the stirrups get caught so it sits awkwardly high. I shimmy it down until it settles into Billy's body and then tighten the cinch strap. I stand waiting for Dave's approval, which he gives in the form of a quiet, "Okay then," before leading Billy out into the penned-in area. 1 foot in the stirrup, I throw my leg across Billy and find myself, suddenly, 6 feet taller than before. I start slow, building up to a canter, my body bouncing in half-time as Billy trots in circles. Dave's daughter Cynthia pulls up to get something from the barn and remarks, "You got yourself a natural." Dave chuckles and nods in agreement. I can't help but think they must be lying, just trying to help boost my confidence, but I have to say, it feels pretty good nonetheless.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye. Looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky.
It's Friday and it's time to move the cattle. a pretty picturesque image. Their heads down in the grass, chomping away. Whoop! It's my job to tail them. Looks like they're all following. Just a big old line of cattle. Brown red bodies moving like a stream. When I was walking out here with Dave, he had me stop to listen to them. He loves the sound of cattle munching on their grass. That's when you know you found someone who's found the right profession for them. You know, he's really excited by what he does. But looking out on them right now, they're pretty cute looking. I'm reminded of this song that I used to sing in music class back when I was in first grade or second grade. And the song's all about cows out in the pasture, and the corn is as high as an elephant's eye.
The corn is as high as an elephant's eye.
It's funny though, because I remember singing that song and not really being able to imagine what that was like to see cows in a pasture. And here I am, you know, 13, 14 years later, and I am with the cows out in the pasture. It's just, it's kind of funny the way things work.
All the cattle are standing like statues. All the cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by. But a little brown maverick is winking her eye. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day.
So it is the moment of truth. Dave had to pick up a shift at the Christian Science reading room in town, so I am left to move the irrigation and test the electric fence for problems. This is normally Dave's job, and it has been entrusted to me, and I better not mess it up. So I'm here at the house getting ready to jump on the ATV, which until a couple days ago, I didn't know how to drive. So, all right. Turn the key. It's in neutral. Start it up. Well, thank God. I walked over and I was supposed to turn the electric fence on, and I was completely afraid that I wouldn't know where the switch was. I wouldn't be able to get to it, or I'd electrocute myself, or I don't know, I get all this anxiety. I think that's comes with the territory though of throwing yourself into something you really don't know much about, and you don't really learn anything until you make yourself learn something. I think I have more anxiety when it comes to farming and ranching and things like that, because if you mess up, it's not like, oh, you forgot to send an email reminder. This is like the cows escape and run into the mountains and you can't find them for 3 weeks because you didn't turn on the electric fence. There's just a greater gravity to the situation, and I think for me also, it's about proving myself in an environment where people like me aren't supposed to be. One, I'm a girl. Two, I'm an outsider. And three, I'm coming from an academic background that doesn't carry a lot of weight when it comes to agriculture, and actually tends to suggest a sort of snobbery and an inability to really pull off hard labor and the responsibilities that come with it. So, I don't know. It's always thrilling when nothing goes wrong. And I don't know, I'm getting better, and that's what's important. Final part of the job, just pulled up my car to the end of the electrical fence and got to hook it back in so that we have a charge running. Voila. All done. First solo cattle task, a success!
It's on safety.
Yep.
And there's a bullet in there.
Okay. Radio listeners, I am about to shoot my first gun.
We're having a problem with these prairie dogs raping and pillaging the countryside, and so we have to thin them out. I'm going to crouch down here. Maybe.
So what's the way to hold this without it feeling awkward?
Well, it's not going to feel... it's going to be a little awkward until you learn how to... until you've shot it a few times, kind of like riding that horse. Now, there's one sticking his head out right up here. There's two of them.
Oh, uh-huh.
You can try shooting that one. Just kind of shoot for over his head a little bit. Not, I mean, just like the top of his head. That bullet should drop right into him. You got him. You got him. I'll be darned. You see how he fell over?
Yeah.
I'll be darned. Good for you. Okay, well, what about that one there?
So I'm going to interject here because listening back on this recording, it was kind of startling to hear how giddy I sound. So I just want to state for the record that shooting a gun and killing an animal is not something I take lightly. That being said, I do understand why you would shoot a prairie dog, and honestly, I'm not morally against it. Every day I see the damage these prairie dogs inflict. And there's such an incredible population of prairie dogs here. Killing a couple of them really doesn't make a dent in the population. But I'm still not exactly sure how I feel about the whole thing.
Squeeze nice and easy now. Don't get hasty. You got him. You got it. That's two.
Nice.
You got him. See there? He's chicken. Yeah, you tipped him over. Good shooting. That's way out there.
Well, once again, good evening and welcome to the Bardi Chuck Wagon. Did you folks get enough to eat and enjoy your dinner? Well, we're sure glad to have you all with us tonight. Now, before we get started, there's a couple of things I'd like to mention to you.
We have some birthday announcements on D6. June Wards has a birthday. And on D3, she's away as a 20th birthday. We better sing happy birthday to you all.
Happy birthday.
I think I used to have sort of rigid ideas of who I was and who I was gonna be and what I was supposed to do, and those rigid guidelines definitely didn't include shooting a rifle or calling cattle or driving around in an ATV or suddenly having a uniform of button downs and boots. When set all together, it sounds like I'm cultivating this, you know, rancher persona, and I'm not. I'm just living this life, and it's just stretching the boundaries of who I thought I was or who I think I am. Obviously, 20 is still really young, and I'm just starting to figure out where I want to be and what I want to be doing and how agriculture fits into all of that.